Hello and welcome once again to NaturalDocRadio.com. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we have news for you. Dr. Slavin, what's on the agenda for today?
Well, as our listeners know, we've been doing the radio show for a long time.
That's true.
And every year, one of the topics we would cover is the flu vaccine and the flu.
And I'm going to throw in there vaccines in general. I think we've discussed a broad spectrum of vaccine issues.
And we've always said before the season, the flu season, you know, they would say the CDC always predicts there are going to be 36,000 deaths from the flu.
That seems to be a relatively consistent number put out there by the CDC.
And then after the flu season, I would always ask the question, well, where are the statistics for this year? You know, those are the predictions. What really happened? And I think I found something here.
It does take quite a bit of searching, though, to find numbers.
And what I found is that number of 36,000 deaths from the flu is completely made up.
Wow.
And the reason they're making it up is because they want to sell more flu vaccines. Now, they say here the evidence of actual death rates show only a few hundred people at most die from the flu. Now, there's a little semantics in here because when they come up with rates, they say, well, you get the flu and then you get complications of the flu like pneumonia. And when you die from the pneumonia, they blame it on the flu. That's how they inflate the numbers.
Okay, but to a certain extent, that is fair. What isn't being discussed is the state of health of the individuals who go from the flu into pneumonia. Were those people who were predisposed to respiratory illness? Were those people in weakened condition? Were they already in a hospital or nursing home setting? There's a lot of details that, as you said, you know, semantics comes into this.
Well, you know, they're coming up with this information because they're looking at death certificates and the U.S. National Vital Statistics System, and that reveals that very few people actually die from the flu, suggesting it's not really much of a threat. Now, again, it's semantics. If you get the flu, Janet, tell me what you think. If you get the flu and then you get a complication like pneumonia and then die, are you going to say you died from the flu or you died from pneumonia?
I died from pneumonia.
Okay, I guess
I'm knocking wood right now.
Now, here's another interesting point. Compared to almost every other potential cause of death out there, the flu hardly even ranks as a threat. And I think that's important to put in perspective because everybody's afraid of the flu and they run to get their flu shots, but there are a lot of other things you should be concerned about. And here's an example. If you're a woman, the data shows that you're more likely to die during pregnancy and childbirth than from the flu.
Okay, so hence the recommendations from the CDC to suggest that pregnant women should take a vaccine, which just sends chills down my spine.
They're saying pregnant women should take a vaccine?
Yeah.
I'm surprised at that.
And so what I'm going to say is, pregnant women out there, pay attention to your vitamin D status, because when your vitamin D status is enhanced, then your immune system is highly functional and really reduces the risk of you contracting the flu potentially and possibly reducing the risk of complications from the flu, pneumonia.
Well, at most, and this is from the American Journal of Public Health, at most, they say, only about 500 people die every year from the actual flu. And in that study, it suggests that number may even be too high. So here's some real numbers to worry about. Meanwhile, heart disease and cancer together kill more than 1.1 million people annually.
And those two situations are very, very much dependent on your day-to-day decisions about foods and nutrition status.
And the government is doing nothing to go after the causes of these deaths. For example, processed foods, refined sugar, crop pesticides, statin drugs, and a host of other legal and subsidized poisons are just a few examples of what really threatens public health, not influenza.
Genetically modified organisms. They're going to disrupt your digestive tract. They're going to disrupt your immune function. So here's something that is found in virtually every processed food you can pick up in the grocery store, unless it says GMO free.
Okay. Now, what the CDC isn't telling the public with its grossly overinflated flu death statistics is that most cases of supposed flu death are actually caused by secondary pneumonia infection. The aforementioned study highlights this, questioning why the government seems to tie these two conditions together when there are numerous other causes of pneumonia. So it could be that if you die of pneumonia, they're blaming the flu. So it's automatically that.
It's very interesting because also the people really need to be paying attention to their overall immune function. That's the underlying issue.
So, first of all, nobody asks why do you get the flu, number one? Why do you get the pneumonia after that? And here's an interesting observation.
The thing is, why do you get the flu? And the person next to you doesn't get the flu. Interesting.
Well, here are some things. It's been pointed out that things like stomach acid suppressing drugs,
yes,
are more likely to cause pneumonia than influenza.
Wow.
And yet the latter is what ends up plastered across headlines every year during the flu season, an obvious ploy again to sell more products and the potentially life-threatening vaccines themselves. So they're saying here people don't necessarily die of the flu virus. And that's a statement by Dr. David Rosenthal, director of Harvard University Health Sciences. What they die of is a secondary pneumonia. So what's weakening the body? So you have to say, okay, you get the flu, but why is your... Okay, and you took a flu shot, let's say. You get the flu, even though you took a flu shot, it's not protecting against the pneumonia that you get as a secondary infection. Why is your body susceptible to getting the flu?
Well, just addressing that secondary pneumonia infection, in addition to the flu shots being very readily available at your corner drugstore, the shots for the pneumonia vaccine are also being, I'm just going to say, marketed or offered. But it seems like, okay, well, if you get this, you pretty much better get this.
Well, it definitely is marketed, and not just that. People, the minute they get admitted to the hospital, they're questioned, did you get the flu shot? Did you get the pneumonia? And if you say yes, you'll get it right away. Now, and why is this important to know? It's not just about the flu shot. It's about trust in the government. Can you believe what the government is telling you? That's the problem, because what happens
is... Wait a minute. What a broad sweeping statement. Can you trust the government? I'm going to, in my mind, can I trust the pharmaceutical company marketing information? Can I trust the CDC with their statistics?
Well, the CDC is the government.
Okay, but it would be... I think, you know, the government is a very broad sweeping term, and let's narrow it down to the CDC.
But the point I'm getting is if they lose credibility in one area, you're going to be suspicious of other things they tell you as well.
Well, I'm extremely suspicious with regard to what, let's say, Medicare covers in the whole health care realm, and then what does your health insurance carrier, what do they cover? It's a very, very shady business, I think.
Well, here's some other things you'll be familiar with. And by the way, bending the truth to push an agenda isn't new to the CDC. I'll give you an example.
How long ago did they start bending the truth, Dr. Slavin?
From the beginning, probably.
Uh-oh.
When they played the same deceptive number tricks with raw milk. I'll give you an example. Back in 2007, the CDC issued a joint report with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, known as the FDA, another government agency, which claimed that raw milk was responsible for dozens of outbreaks and more than 1,000 cases of illness. But then it was reported in 2011, the figures in this report were completely fabricated.
Wow. Fabricated is vastly different than inflated.
So then they go on to say that it's important for the sake of the public record that the CDC's systematic campaign of half-truths, and that's what propaganda is, be challenged. You know, in other words, that's the problem. You know, you should have a governmental agency. When they say something, it should be factual and with no room for challenge because it's 100% accurate. And it's not. And that's what we're learning over and over again, that they have an agenda and they're promoting it despite some of the facts.
And unfortunately, it seems to me to be a corporate agenda that has literally infiltrated government agencies. And you know the back and forth with all of the different people having government jobs or assignments that are also in very high level positions in private corporations.
All right, so here we are in the winter of 2015, and the U.S. public health officials admit that the historically ineffective influenza vaccine is once again ineffective for this year.
Okay, so the CDC is coming out and saying that it is only 20 to 30% effective at protecting you from contracting the flu.
In the past three flu seasons, the CDC has claimed the flu vaccine's overall effectiveness was somewhere between 47 and 62%, while some experts have measured it between 0 and 7%. Other studies suggest that when children get a flu shot every year, it can interfere with healthy immune responses and make them even more likely to get influenza in certain flu seasons. So it's weakening their immune system's ability to fight the flu in different ways. Now, independent medical literature reviews documents that flu shots don't really prevent influenza or complications of influenza, or influenza-like illness associated with other types of viruses that cause about 80% of all respiratory or gastrointestinal infections during any flu season. Here's an example. A car in which seatbelts and brakes only worked at best half the time is not a car Americans would choose to buy or drive. Car manufacturers profiting from selling that kind of defective product would be sued in civil court, and rightly so. But when it comes to flu shots, Americans are forced to get the flu or suffer sanctions.
No. They don't have to get the flu or suffer sanctions. They can do the things personally to support their immune function so that they are strong and not at risk of contracting the flu or moving on from influenza to further complications.
Well, the problem is you are sort of forced to get the flu shot. If you don't, you have trouble getting into school, in your workplace, if you're a healthcare provider. I noticed in one hospital they're forcing the people that didn't get the flu shot to wear a surgical mask all the time when they're walking around, when they're probably just as likely or unlikely to get the flu as the people who got the flu shot.
Who got the flu vaccine, yes.
Now, it says here that U.S. public health officials are making flu vaccine policy that gets turned into law. They are forcing Americans to buy and use pharmaceutical products that fail to work as advertised time and again and can brain injure people too. Now, don't you have a problem with that? They're forcing you to risk your health and perhaps your life in other words, maybe the treatment is worse than the disease they're trying to protect you from.
Okay, so they're forcing me to accept this treatment. I understand. I've been reading about a number of teen cancer patients who have been ordered by the court to receive chemotherapy when they did not want that form of treatment. But how else am I being forced to use a treatment?
Well, we're talking about the flu shot specifically, or actually, and not just the flu shot, other vaccines as well, that they require them to get into college, to go to get into, you know, to go back to school. And here's another step. If you were to develop a side effect from one of these vaccines, you can't sue the drug companies for vaccine failure, brain injury, or death in civil court. They're protected.
That's true. You don't have recourse for injury from a vaccine. But if you have exhibited a particular adverse event because of the administration of a vaccine, you do then have the status to refuse additional vaccines and to get an exemption. And the truth of the matter is there are many different pathways to get an exemption with regard to school. And when it comes to workplace, that's a little more difficult based on the size and the policy of the company you work for.
Well, there have been people that have been fired from their jobs for not getting the flu shot.
That's true.
There have been students who have been denied an education because they didn't get the flu shot. Also, childcare, you know, places where you leave your child may
right.
not take them if you can't show proof they've been vaccinated.
Well, you can get exemptions.
But still, if it's a private company, they may say, well, I don't care if you have an exemption, you're just not welcome here, that kind of thing. Now, we can talk for hours or even days or weeks.
We can.
About vaccines. But I want to, before we finish up today's discussion, I want to just remind you a little bit about the history of vaccines. Because, as you can tell, vaccines are one of the most controversial medical therapies. And really, it affects every one of us because you're being asked to make a decision. Should you get a vaccine or not? And you want to get as much information as you can on both sides of this topic. You know, should you get it or shouldn't you get it? Jenna, where do you stand on that? Which side do you stand on?
Oh, I stand very, very firmly in the no vaccine side. I think that they have a very detrimental effect on your body's own function. And being a supporter of functional medicine, I say do everything you can so that every organ, every system of your body is supported to optimal functionality. And the additional information is the unfortunate contamination with a variety of very, very detrimental ingredients found in vaccines across the board. So I'm not just speaking about the flu vaccine. I'm talking about Gardasil. I'm talking about the MMR vaccine. I'm talking about pneumonia and meningitis vaccines. Let's do things to support how our bodies are meant to work and not artificially introduce into our bodies substances that have questionable effect overall.
Now, some of the information we're speaking about can be found in a new book written by Dr. Suzanne Humphreys. The name of the book is Dissolving Illusions, Disease, Vaccines, and the Forgotten History. Because I bet you nobody knows the history, for example, behind one of the first vaccines, the smallpox vaccine.
And as you introduce this line of discussion, Dr. Slavin, I Was thinking to myself, we certainly do want to finish the discussion with Pasteur's deathbed words, which are very telling.
Yeah. Do you know exactly what he said? I wasn't there.
Oh, you weren't there. Okay. La Touraine.
Right.
That it was not the actual substance that was going to create an illness. It was the terrain upon which the illness-producing substance fell.
Right. And what that means is that, you know, you are exposed to all these bacteria and viruses all the time. You don't get sick all the time, but something changes in your body that allows the infection to grow. But I want to, before we finish up today, I want to just give you a little history about smallpox. And this is found in her book. The smallpox vaccine was actually developed long before the medical establishment knew anything about the human immune system. The revelations on smallpox alone are fascinating enough to purchase this book. And let me say the name of that book, because it's important that, you know, people get the facts, because you're not going to get it from your doctor. Because, you know, every time I, on television, talking heads, get that vaccine. Even though we know it doesn't work this year, the flu vaccine, well, go ahead and get it.
I'm stunned because, as you say, Dr. Slavin, on television, the talking heads, they make the report straight from the CDC, 20 to 30% effectiveness, and then they say the flu shots are available here and here and here and here, and you better go and get them because it is a very difficult year with regard to the flu.
Again, the name of the book, Dissolving Illusions, Disease Vaccines, and the Forgotten History. So the vaccine was actually developed based on a rumor circulating among dairy maids. The rumor was that when a dairy maid had been infected with cowpox, which is a common infection on the udder of the cow, she would no longer be susceptible to smallpox. The rumor was a persistent one, as rumors can be, despite the fact that there was plenty of dairy maids who developed smallpox after having cowpox. But this rumor is what led Edward Jenner to develop the smallpox vaccine, the first smallpox vaccine. And how did they make this vaccine? Basically, it was made by scraping pus off the belly of a cow. Sometimes there was some goat genetic disease in there, and there was horse pox mixed in there as well. There was sometimes human pox mixed in with some glycerin. They would shake it up. They would take kind of a prong and puncture the skin several times. And then they go on to say, what I didn't realize was that there were many people who developed serious smallpox disease and died after they were vaccinated. The severity of disease was often worse in the vaccinated than the unvaccinated. There are statistics that show that the death rate was higher in the vaccinated than the unvaccinated. Well, you know, I have to say that this was at the beginning stages, and they were learning from that, and then they just figured out how to lessen the exposure to the virus, so you weren't getting a lethal dose of the virus.
But who was the crazy person who thought that scraping pus off an animal and then puncturing the skin to get that pus inside your body made very good sense?
Well, it was made by the false observation that the milkmaids who had gotten cowpox were immune to smallpox. They said, okay, let's expose everybody to cowpox and maybe we'll protect them from smallpox. You have to
understand. They did a lot of investigating before they went ahead and scraped that pus.
Well, plus you have to understand the times. Back in probably the 1800s, I would think, there were smallpox epidemics and lots of people died. So this was a real fear of people. So when the smallpox vaccine was developed, there was also no way to accurately diagnose the type of pox disease a person had. It may have been chickenpox, monkeypox, or smallpox. But back then, any kind of pox disease was considered smallpox, even though the vaccine didn't actually have the human smallpox virus in it. Animal pox virus was always used. And according to Dr. Humphreys, it was the most contaminated vaccine that's ever been on the market.
If so you... I'm going to go from there. You just mentioned chickenpox, and of course, the vaccine for kids to prevent chickenpox. And now they're also marketing the vaccine so that you don't get the viral reactivation of the chickenpox virus. So the truth of the matter is, you may get chickenpox if you're not vaccinated. If your immune system is strong, the case of chickenpox may be very mild. And consequently, if you maintain a very, very strong immune system, the potential for the chickenpox, that the virus that is hiding out in your nerve fibers and has the potential to cause an outbreak of shingles, they're offering the shingles vaccine, support your immune system.
No, I agree with that. But
eat sugar.
But here's the history, though. If you look at a town like Leicester in England, that town was noticing that they had one of the highest vaccination rates in the vaccinated world, and their smallpox breakout was higher than ever. The people in the town had a rally. The mayor and some of the health officials were there. They all agreed that they were going to stop vaccinating. And the result was quite different from the predictions. The predictions were that there was going to be a bonfire of disease set upon the planet, and that these people in Leicester were risking the health of the world by not making vaccination mandatory. But once they stopped smallpox vaccines, they had the lowest rate of smallpox infection and deaths. And what's shown in the book, and there were graphs and all these statistics, was that both of them went down precipitously after the vaccinations were stopped. That story tells you that vaccines were not what made the disease go away. What made the disease go away was isolation and sanitation.
Sanitation.
And also eating better, so healthier foods. And the same thing is repeated time and again with polio, with so many of the other illnesses. In fact, if you go on a cruise ship today, you know, before you can take the second step on the cruise ship, they're making you clean your hands with, you know, sanitize, because they know that's the way to control the spread of infection.
And hopefully that hand sanitizer does not contain triclosan, an absolutely horrific chemical that is unfortunately in many of the sanitizers being used.
You know, but it's interesting, though. You can read about the polio epidemic. I'm looking at something here that's very interesting in regard to polio. They say, here's an interesting tidbit that no one has ever talked about. In the past, it has been suggested sometimes that a large part of the polio epidemic was related to increases in sugar consumption. Dr. Benjamin Sandler wrote an entire book about this, and Dr. Humphreys refers to this in her book as well. She explains the connection as follows. The integrity of the flora population in your bowel is extremely important when it comes to dealing with any kind of bowel infection. A diet that's high in sugar is going to, one, impair your cell-mediated immune system, and two, trash your gut flora. It's been shown that in populations who cut back on their sugar intake, the rates of polio plummeted. But it was so unbelievable that nobody really listened to him. So then it goes on to say it was when Dr. Frederick Klenner tried to say that he cured 100% of patients with intravenous vitamin C. They said that can't be, you know, it's impossible.
Vitamin C? Huh.
The low sugar diet was very effective because of the effect it has on the immune system and on the bowel flora. The same with DDT. DDT really trashes the bowel, the intestinal walls, and the flora. Not only can DDT give you all the symptoms of polio all by itself, I didn't know that. Did you ever hear that?
I did not know that.
It can also make the polio virus much more virulent and active in the body for the same reasons. It disturbs the normal function of the bowel. DDT exposure has also been linked to Alzheimer's disease, and it's worth noting that the contemporary equivalent of DDT, glyphosate, according to Dr. Don Huber, professor emeritus at Purdue University, is far more toxic than DDT. It definitely has been shown to decimate your microbiome, and glyphosate preferentially kills bacteria known to be beneficial for human health.
Oh, now, that same glyphosate that we find in Roundup that's sold in Home Depot. Well,
but that's why you want GMO-free foods, because those are the ones that aren't being sprayed with glyphosate. Now,
right.
The microbiome, I think, is a fancy term for your gut flora.
That's
right.
Right.
But that's really in the news. I just heard Dr. David Perlmutter speak about that. And he was showing when he fixed the gut in people that he was, I don't know if I would use the word cure, but showing marked improvement in people with multiple sclerosis. In other words, he's a neurologist, and he was making improvements in neurologic diseases by fixing the gut. So we just learned the gut is important for your total immune system and in fighting off various infections and also neurologic disease, and we don't pay any attention to the gut, or at least as much as that should be.
I would say we're abusive as a culture to our lower digestive
right.
tracts.
So there are a lot of points we touched on today, which we'll get into in further shows.
I think that probably is going to happen. And to all of our listeners, thanks so much for tuning in to naturaldocradio.com. We're really glad you visited, and come again to see and hear the latest. Bye-bye.